It's episode 3 of the Davis Locker Feel Good Film Series, and the films we're discussing today are truly out of this world.
Captain's Log, Stardate 23.9, rounded to the nearest decimal point. You have entered the Davis Locker.
Hello and welcome to the Davis Locker. I'm your host, Chris Davis, and with me, as always, the space to my balls, the extra celestial himself. It's only Gaza Bloody D. How's it going, pal?
Nanu, nanu. How are you, Chris?
I'm all right, babe. I'm all right. What do you know?
Oh, I'll tell you what. The old hay fever's kicked in today, so yeah. Oh, my eyes are pretty red. And do you know what? I look exactly like Zoltar, the actual Zoltar, with my red eyes today, so... I might have to sort that out in post, otherwise people could be complaining.
We'll give it a go. We can sort it out, mate. We can sort it out. But listen, you're not going to be hocking up loogies all over the show, are you?
Oh, I'll try not to. And if I do have a sneezing fit, just carry on regardless and I'll cut me out of it. Don't worry.
Oh, okay. Well, it's just I've been watching Afterlife Season 2 on Netflix, which is incredible. And at one point, Ricky Gervais' character does call someone a snot-curdling... See you next Tuesday. And I don't want to have to lay that kind of smackdown on you, is that right?
Yeah, it's a family show.
Right, are we ready to give people some feel-good entertainment, Gar?
Yeah, I mean, we're still in lockdown. We're still going to be here for a number of weeks, it sounds like, but never fear. Yeah. We're here to give you at least 30 minutes, probably 45, of feel-good entertainment.
We are, yeah. So far, we've looked at a couple of Tom Hanks classics and a few, two musical hits. And today we're going extra celestial with Spielberg and we're blasting off into space with Matt Damon.
Right, without further ado, 3, 2, 1, let's feel good. Okay, so we're kicking off with E.T. the Extraterrestrial. It was released in the year of our birth, 1982, and is an absolutely fantastic film. The synopsis is about a gentle alien that's left stranded on Earth and gets befriended by a 10-year-old boy. It soon becomes apparent that E.T. just wants to go home, but if the young boy Elliot does help him, he will lose a special friend. Okay, let's check out the trailer, Run VT.
Steven Spielberg brings us E.T. the Extraterrestrial. We will witness the arrival. The search, the desertion, the fear, the discovery, the friendship.
I'm keeping him.
The secret, the love, the warning, the signal. The mystery. The danger. The intrusion. The wonderment. The enchantment. The hope. The connection has been made. Universal Pictures presents Steven Spielberg's E.T. The Extraterrestrial.
So there you go, directed by the legend that is Steven Spielberg. Yeah. I'm sure it's high on the feel-good movies of your list, Chris. Oh, tell me about it. Do you love it?
Massively. I think it's just fantastic. I mean, it's certainly a feel-good film, and I think the general consensus is that this is all round the best family film ever made. That's what I'm seeing. When we've been researching and looking at certain lists and all this in top 100s, top 20s, whatever you want to call it, this is always the one that comes up number one for best family film ever made. And directed by the master, Steven Spielberg. I mean, what can we say about Spielberg? I mean, the amount of films on his CV. I mean, your favourite of all time, Jaws. Followed that with, I think, 1941 and Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I mean, it's important to know at this point, like in his career, when he made E.T., he'd kind of changed how culture looks at the summer blockbuster at this point, hasn't he? With Jaws and with Raiders of the Lost Ark. And then along came E.T. And I mean, it had the longest theatrical run of all time. It was in the cinema for a year.
Wasn't it? Over a year, wasn't it? Yeah. Crazy.
Ridiculous.
Crazy.
And do you know how much money Steven Spielberg made a day during his sort of, at its pomp? $500,000 a day he made on his royalties from it. That's incredible. On a share of the profits. That's unbelievable, isn't it? So you can see why you can see why studios at this point started to favour the summer blockbuster after Spielberg had kind of pioneered it with Jaws and Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean, it was almost heralded as the death of the auteur almost, you know. But I think what Spielberg proved was that you can make a film like this that's heartfelt, that's kind of, it's got a bit of action in it, but it can also be critically acclaimed across the board. And I think that's one of the things that makes E.T. so great. You've got that broad appeal of the summer blockbuster, but you've also got at its heart this sort of autobiographical story about this young boy befriending this alien. And it's movie magic, isn't it? It's movie magic.
It is. And we've obviously gone to our social media and asked us what our feel-good, what your favourite feel-good films are. And loads of people said this, like you say, it's on loads of lists. But a special mention to my brother-in-law, who actually named his son Elliot because of this film.
Wow. That's dedication, isn't it? You know, and he's a great character, Elliot, isn't he? You know what I mean? Like, he's such a good kid. You'd be proud to have your son named after him, wouldn't you? You know, he's such a good kid. And I think while we're on Elliot, we've got to talk about the performance of Henry Thomas, because it's such a massive part of this film. And if you haven't seen his original audition when he auditioned for Spielberg, go and look it up on YouTube. Just put Henry Thomas E.T. audition. And the skills of this kid at that age in terms of acting and being able to emote, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And Spielberg gives him the job on the spot, doesn't he? He just says, job's yours, kid, whatever he says.
So, Spielberg's just saying, try to think of something a little bit sad so you can kind of connect with this alien. He thinks about his dog dying, isn't it?
That's
something
right,
like that.
Incredible. And he's just so good in the film. And I mean, all the cast are good, though, aren't really? It's not a massive cast of huge names or anything like that. And I think at the time that really, really helped it, didn't it? I don't think anyone was known in this film at that point.
No.
You know, I don't think anyone was. And it really helps to kind of, you know, what's the phrase? And I'm always on about it in the normal shows, and I've forgotten the phrase now. Suspending your disbelief. It's all about suspension of disbelief. And when you don't, for me, when it's an unknown actor playing a part that I'm really kind of getting involved in, suspending my disbelief becomes a lot easier. And I think that's a big part of E.T., because you've got to believe that this little alien and this little boy are becoming best friends. And it's just a special film. It's a special film.
Yeah, I agree. And just, like I say, his performance is just so, so good for such a young child. I mean, unbelievable. So you have that, the storyline. I mean, we assume, again, that everyone's seen this pretty much, but one of the storylines, or the real strong story on all the three, is Elliot and E.T. have this real connection. So the feelings that E.T.'s feeling, Elliot conveys that as well.
That's right.
And it's just, there's some unbelievable scenes where they just some gut-wrenching ones as well.
Oh, massively.
I mean, it's obviously a massively high, good, feel-good film, but some of the lows, isn't there? Unbelievable as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I kind of, I think we said on the last episode where you have those, it's one of those films where you're hitting the low point, but you never get rock bottom, dear. And that's what a good feel-good film does, is it gives you the trust, but it never gives you rock bottom, and then you get the high at the end, you know. And I mean, this film is, like you say, yes, it's full of the lows, but the highs are as high as you can get, aren't they, really?
Yeah,
I mean, if you were to say to someone, guys, why is E.T. a feel-good film, what are you saying?
Well, I think at the heart of it, it's about friendship, isn't it? That young lad, and in some respects, it's showing how people who are not the same as you can very quickly become someone that you love. And because at the end of it, they have such a strong friendship. Yeah. They love each other. And that's at the heart of it is.
And I can really kind of relate to that, because as a boy, I spent a lot of time hanging around with like a little weird looking fella. I had to get it in, but I'm sorry. I was making a note. So I was like, I shall write this in. I'll nail him with this one. But I think, can we talk for a second about the thing that I always love about E.T. is the fact that there's no CGI for the most part, apart from the re-releases and the remasters or whatever he did, and then went back on them, Spielberg, because he replaced the guns of the agents with walkie-talkies, didn't he? Because in the original, the agents who were after E.T. at the end have got guns, and Spielberg didn't like that message, and then 20 years later for the 20th anniversary, he replaced them after the fact with walkie-talkies, and then replaced them back again. He went back to the original in the end. But anyway, I love the fact that E.T. is a puppet. And the way that translates on screen for me is just miles better than if it were CGI. I mean, can you imagine the scenes when E.T.'s in the sort of incubator thing and all the doctors are working on him? Can you imagine if that was a CGI rendition of it? It just wouldn't be anywhere near the connection that you get with that like real-life puppet. You can see the hands touching it when they're giving him CPR. You can see Elliot like kind of reaching out to him and touching him and all these things. You can see it. And the actors, the kids have got something to interact with.
And I was going to say that because, I mean, you're probably, and I mean, he's such a young lad. His acting ability might be fantastic and his performance is good, but I do not think it would be as good if that puppet wasn't there.
No, I'm 100% convinced, Gav. 100% convinced. I think, it's quite telling what Spielberg did, actually. I mean, they didn't have the 3D animation and things we have now. They wouldn't have been able to do it as good as now. But I think even for the most part, you know, motion-controlled puppetry is just fantastic for an intimate scene like that. Yeah. And what Spielberg did was he shot the film in chronological order so that the kids in the film really got a relationship with this puppet. And he went to sort of great lengths to ensure that happened. So, for example, the internal scenes in the house and things like that, they shot on a soundstage, which is raised. So all the puppetry is underneath so that the kids don't really see it.
Yeah.
And that was all for garnering this relationship with them and, you know, and getting them genuinely kind of connected to it. And at the end, when they're all crying and whatnot, that's real emotion. It's real emotion because they were saying goodbye to this puppet that they've all become friends with, you know.
Essential travel.
Ouch.
Bloody hell, lad. All right, I can hear you. We'll be there shortly.
Do you have a favourite scene at all?
I do love, we've spoken about the incubator scene. I do love, and I'm going to go straight in with my two feel-good bits. And one of them, I was probably the same on one of them, because I think everyone's is the same on one of them. But the first one is when E.T. has died, and Elliot's been there, and he's kind of, you know, he's crying over him and all that kind of thing, and then all of a sudden his chest lights up. And as he's walking away, Elliot doesn't see it, he closes the lid on the incubator, and just as he's closing it, E.T.'s chest, his heart lights up, which means he's coming back to life. And then he walks past the plant, And they start coming alive, and then Elliot notices and he runs back, doesn't he? And then he's like, he's alive. And then he sees his brother. And I think that bit for me, because it's the trough you talk of, and you're thinking, oh man, E.T. Yeah. You know, and even though you've seen it a million times, it still makes you feel sad every single time. And then all of a sudden you're just given a massive high when you realise that E.T.'s coming back alive. So that's my first one. And then obviously the second one is when they take off after being chased by the agents, and they've got that blockade in the middle of the road, and they're riding towards them on the bikes, and it's Elliot and his brother and his mates, And then all of a sudden, as they think they're going to get caught, off they go into the sky. And then the flying theme from the maestro John Williams begins. And it's just an unbelievable combination of Spielberg, Williams, and just pure, like I said before, movie magic for me.
That's it. Yeah, well, I count like the whole last 15-20 minutes as just a whole block of feel goodness. Yeah. And it includes all those things. Yeah. But yeah, the low for me is when his brother finds him in the river, and he's when he's turning white. It's like, oh my god, he's in such a bad way, isn't he? It's like flipping heck.
Yes. Oh, it's terrible. But again, if that was CGI, wouldn't be the same, would it?
Yeah.
And do you know what they did? You're speaking of the last sort of 15 minutes or whatever, with Spielberg and John Williams working together, what Spielberg did with Williams was he said, just compose this and orchestrate this as you would if you were doing it there live. And then they cut the film to it, which is unusual, because usually they will cut the music to the film and not the other way around. But he just wanted that feel for whatever Williams was going to come up with. And obviously it worked, didn't it? You know, it really, really worked. I mean, no matter how many times I've seen that film, like, it gets me every single time. It's just incredible. And can you imagine, as a kid, seeing that in the cinema for the first time, not knowing what's going to happen, not expecting it, because obviously in a first viewing you're not expecting what's going to happen, and then all of a sudden they just take off over those cars, past, you know, through the sky, to the trees, to the forest. Oh my god, incredible, man. And we're lucky that we grew up in that time where we used to go on our bikes to the forest and down the rivers and jump in rivers and stuff, and we're lucky that we had that.
Yeah.
You know, and it just, it's so evocative. I just love it. I can't sing enough praises for E.T. I absolutely love it. And like we said with, I think it was School of Rock. Was it School of Rock? No, Big. Like I said with Big, if you've got kids, watch it again with your kids. It's the best. Watching their mouths wide open as these things happen. Oh, my word. It's just, oh, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. Anyway, go on. Give us your favourite scene. You give us your low point. What's your favourite one?
Well, I think you've got two, and it's really where Spielberg obviously injects humour in it. And we've been talking about the connection that E.T. and Elliot have.
Yeah.
It's where Elliot, he goes to school, but E.T. kind of breaks out of his room, and he's rummaging around the kitchen. He's eating stuff, and he starts drinking some beer. He slowly gets drunk, doesn't he? And Elliot's getting drunk in the... in school as well, and he's obviously he kind of looks to that girl, doesn't he, Elliot? Like, and just obviously he doesn't know what being drunk's like, but the kind of the look he gives to that girl is like perfect. He's like,
that was like the look, that was the way you looked at me after you had that, well, not in that way, but you had that first aftershock that time when we were 17 or whatever we were. Gaz, we had these aftershocks. Gaz hit this one, looked at me, and it was, I've never seen his eyes look like that before. It was just like all over the place, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's so funny. I absolutely love that scene.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And also, I love the Halloween bit, you know, when they take him out, and he's like, you just think to yourself, like, this alien, other than the little family that he knows, he must be looking at all these people dressed up going, what kind of planet am I on? Yeah,
what's going on here? And then obviously you have the Star Wars reference with the little Yoda as he walks past, and he's like, home, home. Hey, I love speaking of home, something I never realised until I watched it again very recently, was that when E.T. never says E.T. phone home first, he says E.T. home phone.
Yeah,
and
no,
then Gertie says, the Drew Barrymore character says, E.T. phone home, and then he repeats it after that. I've never noticed that until, you know, I was this old.
Yeah.
I've never noticed it. Never noticed it. But
That, like you say, the Star Wars little nod, and it was kind of repaid, wasn't it, by... Yes. George Lucas in The Phantom Menace when they're in that Galactic Senate. If you're eagle-eyed, you can see three ETs there.
Because, I mean, you never find out what species he is, do you? He's a botanist.
He is a botanist. But in fact, there's a companion novel and a number of Star Wars companion novels that confirms that his race is actually Azogian, and he's from the planet Brodu Azogi.
Okay.
And according to Star Wars, that the leader of this race is an alien called Greb Lipes, which is actually Spielberg spelt backwards. And also in these novels, it states that E.T.'s name is Zrek, which is Z-R-E-K. So there you go, a little bit of useless information for you.
Wow, okay then. Well, with all that being said then, what else can we say about E.T. really?
I know, yeah. I mean, other than that kind of iconic bike on the moon shot, which Amblin, Spielberg's production company, have used for, well, ever since then, haven't they? Yeah. It's just, and that is iconic, unbelievable.
Everything is real in that shot as well, apart from, obviously, Elliot and E.T., but the production crew, like, waited for the perfect time to catch that size moon by those trees, etc. You know, they'd looked at maps, everything, to get that shot. So that's all real, that. The moon's real, everything's real in that shot.
Yeah.
Which I find incredible. Because it's a beautiful shot. Like you say, completely iconic. And then when you kind of find out all these things after the fact, it really kind of draws you into the film even more. And I think that's, you know, Spielberg's mastery, isn't it? You know, because we've not mentioned kind of anything in that respect in terms of the cinematography of it all. And we should probably say that, sadly, we did lose a cinematographer of this film, Alan Davieux, on the 20th of April, I think, unfortunately, to COVID-19. Rest in peace, sir, and thank you for all the work. So it's a real shame, but it's a, you know, what a legacy of beautiful camera work on this film and on other films he did with Spielberg. So, you know, it's just, for me, it's almost like a perfect package. It's almost a perfect package. For a family film, it's almost a perfect package.
Yeah. Well, they were talking, I think it was on Twitter a couple of days ago, it was like, pick your five perfect films, like a hashtag. Mm. And it was like, this. That was the first one that I thought of. It's like, it's for me, I don't see how you can improve on it, really.
Yeah. And I don't know anyone that doesn't like it.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone that doesn't like it. Perfect mix.
Definitely, yeah. Cool.
Should we move on to the next film?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so the next film we're going to be taking a look at is The Martian. Let's have a look at the trailer.
I guarantee you that at some point, everything's going to go south on you.
Ready?
And you're going to say, this is it.
Watch out!
This is how I end.
Commander, Mark is dead.
We have to go now.
Now you can either accept that, or you can get to work.
This will come as quite a shock to my crewmates, and to NASA, and to the entire world. But I'm still alive. Surprise. Here's the rub. It's gonna be 4 years for another mission to reach me. And I'm in a hab designed to last 31 days. So I gotta make water and grow food on a planet where nothing grows. But if I can't figure out a way to make contact with NASA, then none of this matters anyway.
We've got an incoming message.
Mein Gott.
Mark Watney is still alive.
Woo! In your face, Neil Armstrong.
There must be some kind of way out of here.
Okay, so let's do the math. I have enough food to last for 50 days.
He's going to starve to death long before we can help.
So I'm going to have to science the shit out of this.
He's 50 million miles away from home. He's totally alone. What the hell is he thinking right now?
I am the greatest botanist on this planet.
I know how to save Mark Watney.
But we need the Hermes crew.
We either have a high chance of killing one or a low chance of killing six.
I'm not risking their lives.
It's bigger than one person.
No, it's not.
NASA rejected the mission.
So if we do this?
We're talking mutiny. If anything goes wrong, we die.
Do you realize how crazy this is?
We have no other option.
No matter what happens, tell the world, tell my family, that I never stop fighting to make it home.
Okay, so that was the trailer for The Martian, and as you saw there, it's the story of an astronaut who becomes stranded on Mars after a catastrophe with a Martian storm that leaves him stranded there on the planet as his team presume him dead, understandably so, I would say, yeah. And then he's got to use his ingenuity to find a way to let people back on Earth and at NASA know that he's still alive and he still wants to get back home. So what can we say about The Martian first off then, Gaz? What's your first thoughts on it?
Well, you think, so the director's Ridley Scott. It's set in space. You know what you're going to get, or you think you're going to know. It's going to be like high action.
Yeah.
It's going to be very tense. But in fact, it's a super funny film.
It is,
that's
yeah.
one of the biggest takeaways I yeah. took away from it. I mean, going into it, I was like, yeah, I kind of know what I'm going to get here. But no, yeah. I was kind of blown away with, one, the writing on it, and then Matt Damon's performance. I think that is brilliant. One of the highlights,
brilliant.
One of my favourite Matt Damon performances.
Yeah,
and
fantastic.
He's obviously a very handsome chap. A lot of people say, looks like you, Chris, so...
He wouldn't. I don't think he'd be happy with that. But it's, I mean, like you say, Ridley Scott, what a director. You're talking about Alien, Blade Runner, Gladiator, Kingdom of Heaven, you know, Thelma and Louise, like all these incredible films. And he's one of my favourite directors. And I can't believe he's never won an Oscar for Best Directing, I don't think.
Yeah.
He's won a Best Picture, but he's never won one for directing. And yeah, I mean, like you say, it's really funny to the point that. Didn't it? Was it Oscar or Grammy or not Grammy or BAFTA or something like that that put it in the comedy category?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
And I think what happened was there was a big kick up about it because it was listed, it was submitted as a comedy, and then I think Judd Apatow was saying, "Oh, this isn't fair because you submitted it as a comedy, so that there's less competition than there would be in the drama category." Blah blah blah, and all this. Yeah. There was a big hoo ha about it. But anyway, it is a genuinely funny film, like you say, and I think that really plays into kind of. Why it's a feel-good movie, because there's so many little comedy moments in there, and they sort of keep coming when you're not expecting them, don't they? And like you say, Matt Damon's a massive part of that, because basically you've got that, a lot of it's that found footage kind of style, isn't it, where he's talking to GoPro cameras and he's sort of logging his sort of a video diary of his time on Mars in what they call SOLS, S-O-L, SOLS, whatever you might call them, which is a Martian day. And basically it starts off, he's left on Mars by his team. They don't know about him for 2 months being alive because NASA choose not to tell them. I do apologise. And it goes from there. And I think for me, I love the way it looks. And the first thing I always notice about it is the spacesuits are some of the coolest suits I've ever seen. I think they're really
they
cool.
Are good, aren't they?
I think they're really, really cool. Like compared to some things you see like... And I think it was a conscious choice on the production department's side that they didn't want that kind of big Buzz Lightyear sort of space suit like you see in Gravity and stuff like that, you know, those huge like real sort of moonwalking spaces. They wanted these like, you know, nimble looking numbers, and I think it really does help the look of the film. They look fantastic. The cinematography and the special effects are second to none in this film. I think the way they've recreated Mars is incredible. Never been there yet, but you know, I've seen the pictures from the rover and all that kind of thing, and it really does look like Mars, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. The aesthetic and just all of that, the way, and I love these types of films. And obviously, Ridley Scott is one of the masters of creating subtitles, but just every little detail that goes into the production design, and not just his little habitat. On Mars, it's just like all on the space, like when they're going away, the space shuttles and just everything that just plays into making this look fantastic. And you never question it, do you?
No,
that's the thing. You never question that he's actually there because it just looks fantastic.
I think another reason for the, like you say, it feels authentic, doesn't it? You know, and I think another reason for that is the book by a gentleman called Andy Weir. It's based on a book, and it's a really good book. If you've not read it, have a read of it, because as always, there are a couple of things that are in the book that aren't in the film, etc., etc. And the science and things like that, it all checks out by all accounts. And I mean, I'm no sort of astrophysicist or anything like that, but all the science checks out, and it's really convincing when you read the book. And they did carry that over into the film. And Ridley Scott even said he had trouble understanding a lot of it, but you know, some of the because they left out a couple of things with how he transmits his messages and all the hexadecimal stuff that's in there and all that kind of thing. But Ridley Scott said himself, I had trouble understanding that, so I left that to some other people. but it all plays into this sort of feel of authenticity about it. And what I really kind of enjoy is Matt Damon's performance. Like you say, he's so good at being in this ridiculously perilous situation, but keeping it kind of lighthearted and being positive in the face of this adversity. And he's not the only good performance in it. I mean, the cast in this is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, if we talk about this on the other episodes, if we were doing this as a Top Trumps, I think this is a 10. It's a 9 or a 10.
Yeah.
Out of 10 for the strength of the cast. You've got Matt Damon, you've got Jeff Daniels, we've got Sean Bean in there, we've got Kate Mara, we've got Jessica Chastain, Sebastian Stan, Michael Pena,
Kristen Wiig, of course. Donald Glover, he pops up. He's just a small part, but they thought, get him in.
But it's an integral part.
EGFO.
Yeah.
Everyone that's in there, incredible. Just play every, like, just the small roles, just like played out like they're the main character. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Benedict Wong, who I think is brilliant, you know, seeing him in Doctor Strange and all that. He's just such a great actor. I saw him first off in a, you know, the comedian Sean Locke. He's got a brilliant BBC sitcom that was out years ago called 15 Stories High. I think it's 15 Stories High. And it's really funny, really dark, really witty. And Benedict Wong kind of, that's where I first saw him in that. It was way before he was famous and all that kind of thing. And he was in an episode of the IT Crowd as well. So, I think he's great. And so the cast is massive, massive. And they all play a really good role. And going back to Sean Bean, there's a really funny bit when, I think his name's Richard Purnell or Purcell, which is the Donald Glover character. He figures out a way to save or to get supplies or something like that to Mark Watney, Matt Damon's character. And they have this meeting and he calls it, you know, Project Elrond. And they say, why is it called Project Elrond? And they say, well, it's a secret meeting in the Council of Elrond from the Lord of the Rings. And it's actually Sean Bean who explains that point. And obviously he was in the Council of Elrond as Boromir in the Lord of the Rings. And it's such a nice touch. I love that kind of thing. And like you say, there's always those little comedic knowing nods, isn't there, all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, one of my favourite bits was they're back on Earth and they're saying, you know, how's this affecting him psychologically up there, you know? And then it cuts to him just coming out the shower listening to some disco. dancing away and making fun of Lewis's, who's the commander, played by Jessica Chastain, making fun of her kind of music taste. And that's a running joke through the film, isn't it? You know, so good. And so many of those moments that really kind of, again, going back to the peaks and troughs, because there's some lows in this as well.
Yeah.
Where you think, what's going to happen here? Because we know it's not a true story. So we don't know, when you're watching this film, you don't know what the ending is really. And you can't really predict it because, you know, you never know when a director's going to throw you a slant, do you? And kill off the hero. But obviously, spoiler alert, the hero doesn't die in this one. But he comes very close a few times.
Yeah, you know. That's it. So, and I say it's a other than the kind of the end, which you know you're going to get a spectacular ending. You know you're going to get a spectacular end to that rescue mission. Yeah. But it's a kind of a film of mini wins all the way through.
For sure, yeah.
It's like when he first creates water and he starts making the potatoes, and then he finds like the pathfinder to get the comms back to NASA.
Yeah.
Just all those little tiny things, and yet you say, it's all weaving in with the humor, like where so he gets the pathfinder and he does all the hexadecimal, and like, right, well, it's got a camera on this, so we need an official photo like to put out to the public. So like, you got to do like a serious pose, and because he's watching Happy Days, I think that's one of his. One of the videos he's taking with me, he's like, hey, like the Fonz, and they're like, what are they doing? We can't, because it's all public information, isn't it? NASA's owned by the public or taxpayers' money, so everything is in the public domain. So, like, what we got to do with this now? You can't use this.
And like you say, those mini wins, and even when he has a little slight loss, like for example, when he's the hydrogen explodes in his potato thing, and just before he started the potatoes, isn't he? He's trying to get the water. So he's lighting hydrogen or whatever he's doing. And even though it's catastrophic at the time, the way he explodes back and then it cuts then to him leaving a video message and he's like, so I blew myself up. you know, it's really funny and kind of so well done and really well edited as well.
And it's like smoke going off him as well, isn't it? Like
acme explosion.
Freshly charred.
like Wile E. Coyote stood there, isn't he, with all this like smoke.
Yeah.
it's great. Really.
I love that bit as well, when he's in the rover and they like send him the message. He's like, how did the crew take it that I'm still alive? And it's obviously 2 months past when NASA found out and the crew found out. And he's like, they don't know. And then it turns to like an external view and you just see him, but you can clearly make out that he's really swearing.
But then when he finally gets to message them, he's text messaging them, isn't he? And he managed to get some comms with them. And, you know, he says like, what did they say? They said, oh, we didn't really like you. He's like, why did you leave me on Mars? Like, jokingly.
Yeah.
He said, oh, we didn't really like you anyway, you know. And then they have a real light moment, don't they? They kind of, you know, this huge kind of weight that must be on them at that point, like knowing that they left him there. Obviously, they're going to struggle with that, the fact that he's still alive and they think they left him for dead and all this. And then now all that kind of dissipates when you realise that, oh, they've got, you know, the banter back, if you will. And they just have a laugh about it. And it really kind of smooths off those tense moments in the film, and I love that about it. I really do enjoy that about it.
Going towards the end then, the kind of the rescue mission, one of the bits I really do love is, so they get this, I think it's called the MAV, they get it off the surface of Mars, and it's like, well, we can get him if it's 240 metres away, but the kind of the tarp or whatever they're using over the front of it comes off and it loses its trajectory because of the air resistance. So he doesn't get it, does he? So he's too low. So he's like, oh, flipping heck. So then you're thinking, what is he going to do then?
Yeah, he's knackered,
and there's no way of doing it. And then, but when he's launching, he's like, you can tell on his face, like he's been quite jovial all the way through it. But he almost starts crying anyway. He's like, yeah, I'm anxious to get up there. Yeah. You can tell on his face, like, bloody hell, yeah. And then you think he's been on it, on Mars for such a long time. What type of effect will it have on
him? Do you know that scene, right? When Matt Damon shot that scene, he said he was really kind of thinking about, he's not seeing these people, and even that he was responding to or recorded dialogue, and he said he was trying to get in his mind that, you know, he's not seeing these people and the emotion of it, and he's saying that it's all just come rushing to him, and that crying and all that kind of thing is genuine, and it was one take. Yeah. That scene, it was one take. Fantastic. They did one take of it, and Ridley Scott was like, "That's it. That's a good. That's the one." We'll just use that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Matt Damon was really trying to get into how someone in that situation would feel, which is obviously what you would do as an actor, but the way he kind of went about it, I just think it's a really touching moment, that. Because you do feel that it's genuine. Because the way he breaks up, the way he breaks when he's speaking, like that kind of sound in his voice, and, oh, man, it's just a brilliant performance, and he was nominated for an Oscar for it. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I think he was. Yeah, amazing, amazing. And that ending scene, like you say, it's, even that's still got comedy moments in when he's talking about being Iron Man, because he wants to cut the hole in his glove so he can sort of, you know, use the pressure to propel himself towards them. And he says, you know, and I'll get to be Iron Man and whatever and all this kind of thing. You know, it's great. And it's, you know, the source material is brilliant, but the script is also so well written. And has these touch points that just keep you invested all the time. All the time,
and then I love that bit when the rescue mission is successful. Like the Commander Lewis grabs him, Jessica Chastain, and then so she's like, yeah. So she reports back to the crew. First off, I've got him. So you're like, oh yeah, they've got him. And then they report back to NASA and to the world basically, because everyone was kind of watching it. Yeah. And then they all erupt. So it's like a double celebration. You're like, oh come on, like a double fist bump.
And the shots of that scene are amazing. When, because obviously he's got that. What would you call it? It's not a rope, is it? But it's like a cord or whatever, that orange cord.
Yeah.
And you've got that real bright orange sort of floating around the both of them as they've tried to sort of use it to get him back to safety. Yeah. And it's like all, like almost like ribbons all around them, isn't it? You know, and it just looks amazing as they're just sort of suspended in space, surrounded by all that sort of fat. It's just an incredible shot. Incredible shot. Like, and again, with it being Ridley Scott, you sort of, you know what you're getting. You know you're getting a beautiful looking film. You know, you really do. And I just think it's brilliant. I enjoyed it.
It is.
I watched it today. And that was even though I think that's about the fourth time I've seen it, I think that's the most I've enjoyed it today.
Yeah.
You know, and that says something, doesn't it? You know, when you're watching a film like that and you've seen it so many times, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, I'm trying to think of all the other bits in it, because there's so many of these points. I mean, and we've got to talk about performances. Like Jeff Daniels is really good in it, I love him as he's mainly a serious actor. I mean, a lot of people know him for Dumb and Dumber, but some of his, like The Squid and the Whale that he's in, and films like that where he's a serious actor, I mean, he's so good. Yeah. So good. And I mean, even like Kristen Wiig, even though she hasn't got a massive role, again, really good. like you said, Donald Glover, really good. Sean Bean, really good. You know, the supporting cast of the crew in space, like Sebastian Stan, who plays Bucky,
yeah,
in, you know, the Avengers, Captain America films, etc. Amazing in it. You know, just solid roles, aren't they? Just performed really well. You know, no one, like you said, like, yeah, we, like you always say, no one's dialing it in, are they? No one's phoning it in.
Yeah.
And just, you know, taking the money kind of thing. It's it really is a cohesive kind of cast.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those, I mean, if Ridley Scott come to you and said, right, I'm making a new space movie, yeah, do you want to be in it? But you got to yeah, perform for me. I mean, everyone will jump at the chance, won't they?
Well, he actually jumped at the chance because he was supposed to be making Prometheus 2. And instead he chose to do this. When he saw the script, he chose to do this. You know, because it is, like you say, it's an interesting story. You know, and the book is fantastic. The book's really, really good. It's done like almost like, I don't know if you've ever read Frankenstein, it's done in a similar way to that, where you've got Mark Watney's story playing out as these diary entries, and then it'll sort of flip back to Earth for a couple of chapters and what's happening there and the race to save him and all that kind of thing. And it's just done really, really well. And again, it keeps you gripped, just much like the film does. Keeps you gripped all the way through, you know. And I love, they say after the celebration at the end, what happens is Watney then becomes a teacher or a lecturer, or whatever you want, or a professor, whatever you want to call it. And you get that montage of what they're all kind of up to then, don't you? You know, Sebastian Stan and Kate Mara's characters have a baby. You see Vogel with his family. Michael Peña, I think, is he with his family? I can't remember. I only saw it today.
He goes back to space. Yeah, he's back.
Oh, he goes back to space. Yeah, they do, don't they? Him and Jessica Chastain, don't they? No, she doesn't.
She's at home, I think.
She's at home. She's at home. Yeah. Yeah. So
Sean Bean is he's a golf instructor.
Golfing. Old Sean Bean. He's brilliant, isn't he, Sean Bean? I love Sean Bean.
Yeah.
I mean, right from like Sharp. When Saturday Comes and all that, into Lord of the Rings films, Ronin, he's brilliant in that. He's just Ace Sean Bean. He's never rubbish, he is, ever. He? And he's done some straight to DVD type stuff over the last sort of few years, but then he's good. You know, Sean Bean, you know. But I'll tell you what I do like is at the end, and I'm going to read this off my notes because I want to get this right, because it made me think of something, and it's right at the very end. So after we've had all the funny bits and all the mistakes and all that kind of stuff, right at the very end, when he makes a speech to the students, and he says something, I'm going to read this because it made me think it's quite relevant now to, made me think of how people in the NHS and all that kind of thing are dealing with stuff right now. You know, and he says to his students, he says, at some point, everything's going to go south on you, and you're going to say, this is it, this is how I end. Now, you can either accept that or you can get to work. And he says, that's all it is. You just begin. You do the maths. You solve one problem. Then you solve the next one. Then the next. And if you solve enough problems, then you get to come home. And that's how it feels to me, like with these incredible people working in the NHS at the minute, just solving these problems that we've got in the world with this horrible virus going around and getting people home. And it really kind of like, just maybe I'm being abstract about it, but it really hit home to me that I kind of like, bloody hell, that's relevant right now, that. That's really relevant right now, and it really capped off what is a fantastic film. And it does, it's a hopeful film, isn't it? At the end of the day, I mean, this is against all the odds that this man gets home, against everything that kind of could have gone wrong, went wrong, and they still managed to find a way out of it. And it gives you that hope for our own situation right now, you know. And that's how I felt about it, and that's why it's a feel-good film for me. It's very hopeful, and I love that.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah, well, yeah, I can't think of a better way of rounding that off, Chris. Well done.
It was just how it felt. So I guess with that in mind then, Gar, we haven't even told people to look on social media or tell us any comments or nothing. We've just been too involved in these films, haven't we? We both love them so much.
Fantastic.
If you do want to tell us what things we've forgotten or what you love about E.T. or what you love about The Martian, please get on our social media. We are on at The Davis Locker across Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. You can listen to this podcast if you want to on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Anything else, Gar?
Yeah. We've got a nifty little website, haven't we?
Of course.
www.thedavislocker.com. get on there. You'll find our news, reviews, all of these that we're doing, all our past series, everything that you want to find out about me and Chris, everything's on there. So yeah, make sure you log on and yeah, get onto YouTube, subscribe, and let us know in the comments there what you want to see going forward. The next episode in a couple of days' time, we're going for a sporty feel. We're going for Cool Runnings,
A classic,
and Fighting With My Family, which is quite a modern film about WWE and how Paige got into wrestling. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to these two, Chris.
Yeah, me too, mate. I mean, Cool Runnings, it's brilliant, isn't it? You know, and that's what I love about this series that we're doing, is that we're not having to like critically review anything. We already know we like these films, so it's great. There's no shocks, is there? It's like, and I get to watch it again when we're researching it. You get to watch these amazing films again, so it's fantastic. Look after yourselves. We know it's a mad situation at the minute, and like we said on one of the previous episodes, if you're struggling with being in lockdown, if you're self-isolating and you want to talk to anyone, there are loads of charities out there that can help you out. There's people like Mind and the Samaritans. Please get in touch with them. If you don't know where to reach out to and you're watching this, drop us a message, give us your details, and we will sort you out with some places that will talk to you. Even if you want to message us and talk to us, we haven't got much to say. That's very good if we go, you know, we'll rattle on about films or something. You know, if you're not sleeping, maybe this will bore you. We could bore you to tears easily, couldn't we? We could do that. I can ramble with the best of them. But in all seriousness, look after yourselves, look after each other, and we will see you soon.
Beam me up, Scotty.